Over the last several weeks, we've had an introduction, one each week, to the UU shared values that we chose as a denomination at our June General Assembly to animate our the exciting part of our bylaws, Article 2, where we lay out what is this all about? Why do we gather? Why are we a faith community at all? And if you've been here for any of those weeks, you've probably met our little mnemonic friend here, the jet pig, to remind us of what each of those six principles are. This jet pig has a name. It's love. This is love, the jet pig, because love is what undergirds all of these values, holds them together, and, well, so that's our topic today. How is it connected to each one of these? Well, one of these values is a commitment to create a community, a local community, a world community where all thrive. Taking something that we generally consider to be private, something for among our family, our friends, love. In a family, in a circle of friends, we want everybody to thrive. So we're taking that with this value and extending it to all. Make a world where all thrive. That's justice. J in jet pig. Cornel West says justice is what love looks like in public. So justice is an extension of love. And then, of course, when we love someone, we want what is best for them. When we love ourselves, we want what is best for ourselves. And we want to make sure that everyone equally has what they need. That's equity. Equity is built on a foundation of love. Love for ourselves and for our future selves. That can be very hard to come by. Sometimes we forget to act upon that. And when we do, and we say, I'm not going to allow myself to stay in a place that's hurting me, I'm not going to allow myself to languish in stasis if I need to be somewhere else or be somebody else, when I say I'm going to move into those beautiful new possibilities, because of my love for myself, that's transformation. J-E-T. Transformation has its roots in love. And love helps us to see in each other something of value, something that adds a piece of insight about life to those pieces we already have. And to want to nurture that, so that we can learn from each other and grow together, that's pluralism. Pluralism is looking to a community, creating a community that's based in love. As Valerie Kaur says elsewhere in the title of her book, there is no stranger. There is no one and other. There's nothing separate. To look upon each person, each being that shares our world and recognize you are connected to me. To not care about you would be like my right hand not caring about my left. It would be about like my liver not worrying about what my lungs are feeling. That's interdependence. Interdependence is an enactment of love. And finally, of course, the way we see something a loved one would love and want to have, and we say, oh, I want to give this to you. I want to do this for you. It flows so naturally when there's somebody we care about. A drive to
give rather than hold on to everything for ourselves. That's generosity. And generosity, of course, grows out of love. A friend of mine, Diana McLean, says, love is the why. When asked what her ministry is about, when asked why she's a parent and a spouse and a poet, she comes back to that. Love is the why. The motivation of our lives, the reason for our gatherings, that's what is now enshrined in our Article 2, Unitarian Universalist, gather together for the sake of love and empowered by love and inspired by love and challenged by love, because it is challenging. As Kaur says, love is more than a feeling. It's an action. It's a lot of actions taken over and over again when we don't feel so warm and fuzzy. You may know that in ancient Greek times, there were several words that we translate as love, and they mean several different sorts of love. There's philia, the kind of love that we feel for a friend or companion, a person who's involved in common endeavors, someone we have something in common with, want to be with, hence Philadelphia, translated as the city of brotherly love. There's eros, which of course is the root of erotic, desire, romance, sexual love, romantic love, the love between lovers. There's storge, which is familial love, especially the love a parent has for a child. It's not based on knowing anything about this person, on liking or commonalities the way a friend or a lover might be. You just love them from the start. It's deep, it's instinctual, it's unconditional. And then there are other Greek words for love as well. Ludus, philautia, pragma, mania. Sounds interesting. I won't get into all of them today, but the love at the center of our shared values, the love that is love's name, is what the Greeks in ancient days called agape. Agape is kind of like storge extended to everybody. Christians say agape is what God the Father feels for all of his children, just like one would hope a human father feels instinctively, unshakably for his children. One would hope. Eros and philia grow from circumstance, right? We're attracted to somebody. We feel desire for somebody. We like somebody. They make us laugh. We want to be with them. We have something in common. We feel them based on others' characteristics. And about other people, we don't feel them. I don't feel any eros for this person. I don't feel any philia for that person. It's okay, it's very particular. It's based on what we know about each other. It's based on the qualities that others have. But that's not what agape is like. It's not about the soul selecting her own society, in the words of Emily Dickinson. It's not about who makes you laugh. It's not about who turns you on. It's not really a feeling. It's an action. The parent gets up in the middle of the night to take care of the child who needs them. Pure, unconditional love. Would they do that for most people? Would they like this child enough to do it for them? It's not about liking. It's sweet, hard labor, fierce, bloody, imperfect. It's storge extended to everybody. So it takes practice. It grows with practice. It is a practice. It's a how as well as a why. How are we going to live these values, justice on through to generosity? Well, imperfectly, fiercely, with sweet, hard labor, and with practice. Congregations are a workshop of love, or use the metaphor that works for you, a laboratory of love, a gym, a classroom, a training ground, where we practice and try to get better at agape. When we practice, that muscle, like the muscle that drives our blood around our body, it gets stronger. Maybe that's why, unlike the Greeks, who I think thought the root of love was the liver, maybe that's why we talk about it as the heart. It's so powerful, it's always there. Other types of love in congregations as well, and get better at them, I hope. We come here to find friends, to people we have something in common with. We have a common endeavor. That's philia, and there's a lot of it here in this room, these airwaves, and out to the wide network of people who are involved in this congregation. We come here looking for people who get us and whom we get, people who share a sense of humor or share our values. Sometimes, and a few people here could tell you the story of that, people find eros here as well. Few people have found their life partners here at UUCPA. In other words, we come here for companionship and to find partners of our souls, people with whom we want to spend our time. And congregations are also a training space of agape, to learn to look upon others, those gathered here and those far away, and see not a single stranger. Only parts of ourselves we do not yet know. Well, we get to practice that here too. The nice thing is we practice it just when things get difficult. You know, when I've been in a women's group for years and years. It's not in this congregation. It's among other UU women clergy. And there are people who I already knew and really liked when I went into that group. There were people who were really unknown to me, who I very quickly realized we were really going to hit it off. And then there were women who, month in, month out, I just didn't really get them. I was glad to be in this group with them. It was fine. But I didn't think, oh, that's somebody I would call if I wanted to do a social thing on a weekend. That's not somebody who I would call if I were in trouble. She's just in my group. It's okay. And some of the deepest learning in that group for me has come from my relationships with the people that I didn't particularly hit it off with or think, oh, I would be this woman's friend if I met her anywhere. Something like agape is developing. I just can't see her as a stranger anymore, or her over here. Turns out that she and I are closely connected, and I just didn't know this part of myself yet until I got to know her a little better. That doesn't mean all of a sudden like we're best friends. There is that growing closeness between people. People who you didn't used to know, who you then become your best friend, that happens. But that's not agape. Agape is just, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether I would call you on a Saturday night to go out for a movie. It doesn't matter if you're the person I just want to stay and talk to after the group closes. So you've probably had that kind of experience here as well. It's a great opportunity to practice agape. What is this part of me that I do not yet know? Kaur suggests three forms of practice for this revolutionary love. One is based on loving ourselves. She says, for loving ourselves, the watchword is, take it from a midwife, breathe and push. Breathe and push. She says, and she's a woman who has given birth, so This is how this came to her mind. She said, a midwife doesn't say, breathe now so that you can push, 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 push. No, it's back and forth. How we learn to love ourselves is we take care of ourselves, breathe so that we can do the hard thing, the getting through a layoff, the working for on an election, the having a hard conversation with a family member. All the things we have to do to take care of ourselves and our world, the way we do that, we push and we breathe. I hope a congregation is a place for us to all to do both of those things. We push, we work hard on something, and we come to the community dance and breathe. We lift our voices in song. So that's for loving ourselves, one part of revolutionary love. Another part, of course, is loving our opponents. She doesn't say enemies, which is maybe why she doesn't get the laugh that G.K. Chesterton did. She prefers to us for think of the people we are working against in some way as our opponents. But sometimes that can be very bitter. Sometimes not so much. People who are working for something quite the opposite of what we're working for. And she says, the task here is tend the wound in ourselves, for one thing. If our opponent has harmed us in some way, we might have to do some healing before we can even talk to them. She has powerful stories about that, which I recommend her book to get into them, or her TED Talk if you want the short version. Valerie Kaur. But she says that but then we have to see our opponents and recognize they also carry wounds. And we don't know what they are yet, but they're there. What is the wound that they bring to this relationship that makes it prickly and difficult? And sure, when we tend our wounds and they tend theirs, it doesn't mean that we're all going to want to work for the same things. Not at all. The political realm is one obvious example. But the hatred will just dissipate from that reaction, from that relationship. You just don't hate somebody anymore if you recognize, oh, they're acting from their wounds, and so am I. Maybe I can tend their wounds just as I tend mine. That's the act of revolutionary love. And then there's that broader, we have ourselves, we have opponents, and then we have the broadest of all, others, just all others. All the billions of beings in this world. How are we to have love for them, agape for them? And the practice that she recommends here is see no stranger. Recognize every time you see somebody that you just don't know, you can't do this every single time, everybody who passes you on the street, everybody sitting with you on the bus, but you can make it a practice now and then. Look around in that cafe and say, oh, there's 7 other people sitting here and 3 behind the counter. Maybe as I sip my tea here, I can just look at each one of them and think, you're not a stranger. You're not an enemy or an opponent. You're part of myself that I don't know yet. And I may never know them all, but then you wish them well. You can say, I don't know you, person who just took my tea order. I don't know you, that person reading a newspaper at the next table. I don't know you, the 2 people who are having way too loud a conversation, and how am I supposed to think? But you're not strangers, because we're all interdependent. We're all part of one another. And if we had the time, if we shared a table, we could get to know each other. So let me extend my love to you, agape, by just recognizing there are no strangers. It's a powerful practice, and I recommend it. There are so many ways for us to practice right here this love that is the foundation, the support of all our values. These six and so many others we could share with one another, will share with one another over the years. So let us accept in gratitude all of the opportunities we have here to learn agape, practice that radical, revolutionary love for ourselves, our opponents, and everyone. We are blessed.